Hello and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Friday, January 24th, 2020. There has been quite a significant amount of activity since we talked to you last, and especially among the science aspect as well that Dr. Nyman wants to go over. Dr. Nyman, welcome back.
Thanks, Ryan. I thought I'd just give a brief update on the numbers, clear up a couple misconceptions on who the suspect cases are and what the case fatality rate is, and then touch base on two papers that came out in Lancet, and then kind of focus in on some sequence data that I'll probably spend most of my time going through. The numbers are a partial update. There's an update on the actual number of cases. That's up to 1,126, and of those, 1,096 are in mainland China. There's 10 more that are divided up between Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Macau. And then there's another 20 that are international outside of China or associated territories. And some of the more notable ones that are new is there are now 3 cases in France, and Thailand's leading with 5 overall. And Nepal is kind of the additional addition that didn't have any prior to today. So the cases are going up on a pretty steady pace. The one data point that hasn't been updated yet is the number of suspect cases. That was, I think, 1106, and I don't think I haven't been able to find an update on that. But it's likely that the number of suspect cases will probably be significantly higher than that. And it will bring the total number of cases, I would assume, somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000. But that's kind of as expected. There's really no reason that the number of new cases is going to go down. Yesterday, it was 900 cases. And I would think there'd be at least 1,000 cases if you add in the suspect cases. There have been approximately almost 300 confirmed cases. So that would, there's based upon what happened yesterday, I would think the suspect cases would be significantly more than the confirmed cases. And that's why I expect that there'll be 1,200 to 1,500 more cases between yesterday and today. The death numbers went from 28, of which 26 were in Wuhan, 41. All the new ones were in Wuhan, so there's still only 2 outside of Wuhan. But the striking number from the Wuhan update was that there are 15 new deaths and 1 new discharge. And the 1 new discharge is kind of the key number because the grand total of discharges, I believe, is 35. So there have only been 35 discharges, and there have been 41 deaths. And so if you just look at outcomes, it is now above 50% for case fatality rate. That's exceedingly high and may come down a little, but is certainly more than an order of magnitude higher than the 3% that's kind of been bandied about and was actually mentioned in as an estimate in one of the Lancet reports. That estimate was overall in the 41 cases that were covered in the Lancet report, the case fatality rate was believe it was 14.6. So they had six of the 41 cases. Six died. All 41, haven't died or been discharged. There's still cases that are in the hospital. But if you just look at the ones with the outcome, it was around 14%. And then they just basically dumped all the other cases on top. So they're given a number that if all of them survive, and so their number is wrong already. It lasted one day, because now instead of 26 deaths, there are now 41 deaths. And they're outpacing the high number that are added on. So the idea that you can put a new case in the denominator when there's no time for them to die, and you've got literally hundreds of cases that have been confirmed that are in critical or serious condition, many of those are not going to survive. And the only way you can have a reasonable estimate of what the case fatality rate is to look at the cases that you have in outcome. So you look at how many cases have been discharged, and you look at how many cases have died, and so you know what the status of those are. And then all the other ones that are still in the hospital, you wait to see whether they are discharged or whether they die. So using the outcome, the case fatality rate is now above 50%. There's 41 deaths and something like 35 discharges. So that is one of the misconceptions, is this low single-digit case fatality rate has no basis. It requires that all the cases that have been confirmed and are hospitalized survive. And that's an unrealistic expectation in view of the fact that more cases have died than have been discharged. So I wanted to clear up that case fatality rate. This is a very serious rate. Before today, it was at 45%. Now it's well over 50%. For MERS, it's about 35%. And for SARS, it was around 10%. So the situation is fairly dire with regard to a case fatality rate. Then the other can't really update today tonight, because there hasn't been an update yet on the number of suspect cases. The suspect cases, as a reminder, are not the same type of suspect cases as those that are being picked up through fever text, or not even fever text, just even if they turn themselves in. It's not the cases that have symptoms and have come from Wuhan. The vast majority of those cases will be negative because they have fevers from a variety of other infections. It's flu season. There's lots of viruses out there that can cause a fever, and there'll be more of those, many more of those than have actually been infected by the virus at this time. But so those suspect cases, most of them will be negative for the novel coronavirus, 2019 nCoV. And on the other hand, the ones that are cited by the Department of Health, they are suspect because two positive test results are required to classify a patient as being confirmed. So initially, they are tested by the state lab or the local labs, the provincial labs or city labs in the case of Wuhan. If they're positive on the PCR test, then the sample sent off to the national lab. And then if the national lab confirms the the local, and they almost always do, then those suspect cases become confirmed cases. So yesterday it was something like 830 confirmed and 1103 that were suspect. So there were really over 1900 cases. And that represented a jump of about 900 over the prior day, with about 250 of them being confirmed, new confirmed cases, and another 650 being additional suspect cases. So the number of cases is considerably higher than most realize, because they kind of discount the suspect cases, assuming that they may not become positive. But with the Ministry of Health classification, those in fact will. So the two misconceptions is the case fatality rate being low when it's extraordinarily high, and the number of cases going up fairly significantly, but they're really going up about four times as high as the confirmed, because there are so many suspect, and how quickly these suspect are going to turn into confirms depends on how fast the national labs are going to do that lab. And I'm sure the national labs overwhelmed with the explosion of cases. And so now I want to kind of shift gears and look at the science and actually the sequences. And as I've said many times in the past, the stories in the sequence. And there were a couple developments today that shed some light as to exactly why there is an explosion of sequences. There's a little bit of an explosion of sequences, but there are an explosion of confirmed cases and associated deaths. And there was a series of sequences that were released from Guangdong province a few days ago. There was actually six. There were six sequences that were released. And they had designations. Five of them were from clusters and one was not. And of the five that were from clusters, three of them were from Shenzhen, which is one of the larger cities in Guangdong province, and it's the ones closest to Hong Kong. And an analysis showed that the two clusters each matched, the members of the clusters matched each other. So the two that were in the one cluster had one mutation, and they both had the same mutation. And the three that were from Shenzhen had three mutations, and all three individuals had all three of the mutations. So the mutational analysis was consistent with the three samples from Shenzhen all being in the same cluster. And from the two samples from the Zuma or something along those lines, the other city, they were in a separate cluster. And then the Guangdong Department of Health put out an update, and they noted that, even before the latest today's update, they had noted that there were six different clusters in Guangdong, and that those six clusters represented 17 individuals, which was more than half of the positives for Guangdong. And then today it went higher, that there were 10 clusters in Guangdong, and they represented 27 individuals. And so it was clear that there was quite a bit of cluster activity in Guangdong province. And then they zeroed in on one cluster that had five numbers. And they gave the ages and genders, and three of those, the three oldest, actually matched what was in the three clusters as far as age and gender is concerned. And it was clear that the three sequences that were released were from the three oldest individuals in the five-person cluster. Anna gave some detail about them and who was related to who, and the age and range. The two that weren't, didn't have sequences, one I believe was 10 and the other was 17. And then the ones that the sequences were given out, I think it was 63, 64, and 65. So the three that were in the 60s, you know, had sequences available, and they were all, they all had those same three mutations. And then this morning, there was a paper in The Lancet that talked about a cluster from Shenzhen. And it was clear that they were talking about the same cluster. And they had, I believe, up to six individuals. And they gave more details. And that was a family that had gone to Wuhan to visit relatives who had been infected. And then apparently those relatives that were infected in Wuhan infected the visitors from Shenzhen. And then they ended up returning to Shenzhen and infected another family member who had not gone to Wuhan. And the paper in Lancet gave quite a bit of detail on this family, and they also noted that they all had abnormal chest CT scans of their lungs. They had various levels of pneumonia. They had ground glass opacities, and they clearly had some issues with their lungs. And there was one child that was asymptomatic, but parents insisted that they get a CT scan of the asymptomatic child, and indeed that child also had problems with their lungs based upon CT scan. And so it looked like they could be infected and it could cause problems with their lungs, and that would happen in spite of the fact that they were asymptomatic and tested negative. They still had enough virus to cause lung damage. So that was kind of the take-home lesson on the cluster. But the piece of information that was of interest for this discussion actually happened this afternoon when the CDC released the sequence on the first case in the U.S., which was in Washington State near Seattle. It came in on CTAC, came into the airport at CTAC. And they released that sequence at GenBank. And one of the questions about the cluster was that there seemed to be a rather large cluster in Shenzhen. There were other clusters in Shenzhen, but those sequences hadn't been released yet. And the three mutations that were in this cluster were not in any of the prior sequences. So there have been quite a few others. There's probably been 15 to 18 prior sequences that were released. And none of those prior sequences had these three mutations. And one of the mutations was on in the open reading frame number 8. And that particular gene had been of interest because of what had happened in the SARS outbreak. In the SARS outbreak, the outbreak started on the slow side. It wasn't being reported. ProMed was reporting on rumors that were coming out of a mystery disease in Guangdong province And through February, there really wasn't a whole lot of information beyond what was being reported as rumors. And then there was the incident at the Metropole Hotel, where a physician who had been treating patients in Guangdong province had become infected. He came to Hong Kong because for a wedding, and he checked into the Metropole Hotel. He was at that point very symptomatic. He ended up vomiting in the hall. He was up on the ninth floor, and at least seven individuals on the ninth floor were infected. Other individuals at the hotel were also infected. The physician ended up dying. His brother ended up dying. But many of those staying in the hotel flew out of that hotel to their original homes, which were in Toronto and Hanoi. Well, actually, Hanoi was a businessman. I think he might have just gone there on a business trip. Singapore, and one who was visiting somebody at the hotel went to, he lived in Hong Kong. And they ended up, well, the one in Toronto never got to the hospital. She died at home, but she infected her son, and he went to the hospital. The others went directly themselves to the hospital, and they all ended up with major outbreaks involving healthcare workers and other patients that subsequently came to those hospitals. And that was kind of the beginning of this SARS outbreak that got a lot of attention. Subsequently, the sequence showed that the virus that was from all of these cases at the Metropole Hotel all had a 29 nucleotide deletion, and that deletion was in open reading frame number 8. So changes in the ORF8 was of interest. All of the sequences that were isolated from various patients in countries outside of mainland China ended up having that same 29 nucleotide deletion. And the thought was that that produced a significant effect on the ability of the virus to spread in humans and probably to dramatically increase the fatality rate. Before the Metropole Hotel incident, there had been about 300 cases. And at the time, there had only been 5 deaths. So there had been 5 deaths out of 300 cases, a relatively low case fatality rate of about 1.5%. And then after the mutation drove that particular version of the SARS coronavirus, the case fatality rate went up to at least 10%. It actually was higher in places like Hong Kong, and it's closer to 15-16%. And the thought was that that deletion was a major factor in causing the international spread and the large number of deaths that were associated with the SARS outbreak in 2002, but mostly 2003. So the fact that this cluster had a mutation in ORF8, and the fact that ORF8 was actually, there was a bat sequence, a couple bat sequences, and that were the closest to the various human sequences that have been identified in this outbreak, the 2019 nCoV. One of the proteins that was the closest was actually ORF8, and there were only 6 differences, 6 amino acid differences, and in this Ben cluster, there was a 7th, so it went from 6 to 7. And that was worried that possibly this mutation in ORF8 was causing the virus to spread more easily, and therefore there were more clusters, and they were larger clusters. And so the question was whether new cases were going to start showing up and have this same set of mutations, indicating that even though it had not been seen in any of the isolates before this Shenzhen cluster, it might very well start to be seen in more afterwards. And that would suggest that that particular mutation made that virus more fit as far as humans are concerned, and or at least more transmissible. And it would be somewhat analogous to what happened with the 29 nucleotide deletion, that the virus that had that change in that particular gene was able to spread more effectively in humans. And so when the CDC released the sequence of the import from China, it was of interest to see if there would be any similarity with that sequence with the Shenzhen cluster. And of the three mutations that was in the Shenzhen cluster, the case from Washington had two of them, and that included ORF8. So the same mutation that was in Shenzhen in ORF8 was present in case from Washington, and that raises concerns that that particular mutation is becoming more common in the cases that are being isolated more recently, because that particular mutation is driving the ability of the virus to transmit in humans. Another clue is, in the last week, many of the media reports didn't say there was such a mutation, but when asked about why was there so much activity as far as the virus spreading so much more quickly, the many said, well, they're concerned that it could mutate kind of like what happened with SARS, and become more adapted to humans. And the sequence that the CDC released raises a distinct possibility that's precisely what happened. And one or the other, or both of the sequences, the mutations that are both in Washington as well as the three sequences from Shenzhen are responsible. Although, you know, it's very possible that only one of them is responsible, and that one is likely to be in ORF8. The other mutation is further upstream and a much larger protein that unchanged in is probably not going to be as significant. The ORF8 is actually quite small. It's only 121 amino acids. And like I say, it is very closely related to the bat sequence. And the same thing happened with SARS. It turned out that there was recombination and the ORF8 was much closer to SARS that was found in other bat species rather than the ones that were related to the rest of the SARS. So it indicated that the SARS sequence was a recombinant, and it had picked up an ORF8 from one version of the virus, and the rest of the SARS virus came from another version in other bats. So there are two different bat SARS-like sequences, and the one that humans had, the ORFB from one, and the rest of the genome from another. So a recombination was involved initially, and then there was this deletion. And in this case, it also seems to be quite similar for this region as far as the sequences in humans and what they're finding in bats. But probably more importantly, there seems to be a new mutation now that wasn't in the earlier sequences, but is in the cluster in Shenzhen, plus this more recent case in Washington State. And the prediction is that as more and more sequences are released from more recent infections, that this change in orthate will become very common. So I think that's where things stand right now. The story is in the sequence, and I think the story is in ORF-B, and it was just made fairly obvious to anyone with access to the public sequences that this commonality between these sequences raises significant concerns. And that's it for tonight. So are you there?